And hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, things to think about. Different ways of thinking about things. I want you to try to find a move your brain a little bit. Because if you keep looking at it all the same way, you keep seeing the same things. A very wise man said, if you do what you've always done, you're going to get what you always got. Today, I want to take a different way of looking at certain psychological functioning, such as addiction, compulsions, behavior disorders. Now, to lead you into this, I want you to know a story about a man who I met with recently, and he and I were talking about it, and he was talking about me and my development. And I said to him, I said, you know, over time, what happened to me is I no longer ask the question, who am I? That's a good question to ask when you're very young. Who am I? But the question I ask is, where was I back then? So I think about myself during certain times of my life, and I say, where was I? Where was the me that I know, who was a more mature, calm, kind, decent human? Where was he during that time? Think back in your life. Think back in your life to a time when you made a mistake or you were dealing with a stressful situation and the way you were dealing with it. Can you ask yourself, where was I? Was I hiding in the corner somewhere? This kind of comes about as a result of my hearing a program recently. And in this radio program, someone said that when you have an addiction, the addiction does the talking. So I thought about that, and I've seen that because I've worked a lot with addictions, and I've worked with people, especially with cocaine addictions. And I've always noticed that it is the cocaine who has the language, who is running the show, the drug itself. Just as with tobacco, with smoking, the cigarettes run the show. How can you tell? If you talk to somebody about quitting smoking, you'll say, you know, what about quitting smoking? They'd light a cigarette immediately as you're talking to them. It's almost like the cigarette has a life of its own. Or the smoker has a life of its own, which is different than you. So what if this were possible? What if we discovered that every addiction, compulsion that we have is being run by an alter self, another us, that there's not just one you, but two yous? When you get up in the middle of the night and you go raid the refrigerator, who is that? Who is that guy who's raiding the refrigerator in the middle of the night? Sometimes I wake up and I'm standing at the refrigerator and say, what am I doing here? Who is this man? This is not the man I want to be. It's not what I want to be doing right now. It's almost like I can meet myself in the kitchen. You know, I bump into myself. Hey, what are you doing here? I was just getting a glass of water. I'm raiding the refrigerator. You know, whoa. Who is that other guy? So part of what we do in life, part of what we do in the world of psychology, is we keep telling you, you have to take responsibility for who you are. You have to be accountable for who you are. Yes, of course you do, I guess. But what if you weren't? What if you're not accountable? What if the devil made you do it? You know, what if it was really true that the devil could cause you to do certain things, or some other force can cause you to do certain things? What if that's at work instead? People are told that they have to own their feelings. Why do you have to own your feelings? Why can't you just rent them? You know what I mean? Rent them, try them on. If you like them, you keep them. If you don't, you send them back. Now, if you think about addiction, it gets real clear. The altered personality becomes real clear. Now for a little background. My name is Armand DeMille. I have been practicing psychotherapy for 40 years. And in that time, one of my specialties was working with dissociative identity disorder, which was also known as multiple personality disorder, which is now fairly popular on TV on the HBO series, The World of Tara. In the multiple personality disorders, when I would treat them, as I would work with them, I would see personality after personality after personality, all functioning to do different things, each having their own function. Now, as a practitioner, it's very exciting to work with multiple personality on one level. On another level, it's terrifying because the work is never ending, because somebody is always threatening to kill the main character, because there's terror in there all the way. It's a full-time commitment. So even though it looks nice and cute, you know, oh, I'm doing really exciting work, it's really, 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 really very difficult work. So as I was working with this, and as I started working with this thing that happened with people, this multiple personality, I began realizing that I needed a supervisor, and I got a supervisor who taught me. Ralph Allison was his name. And he would talk about the many different kinds of personalities that people develop. Now, here's the way it works. You develop a personality whenever you believe that your existence is threatened by something one way or another. And almost every multiple personality that I have ever met or seen anything about was abused as a child. They weren't just abused. They were abused. Physically abused, sexually abused, mentally abused, but they were abused. A child is being beaten, tied to a radiator by some very, very irrational person who's trying to hurt them to the point of killing them. The child has to do something to survive. It says, how am I going to get through this? How am I going to get through it? The physical body has some mechanism that speaks out to us and says, you got to get away from this, you know? Hey, little Joe, you know, how are you going to get out of this? What are you going to do? We're going to get killed. So little Joe says, what if I'm not here? And then it begins. And what you do is you leave your body behind and you take your mentality, your spirit, yourself away from the situation and you leave behind an empty shell so that it could take the beating and go on ticking. And you remove yourself. You remove yourself so that you no longer even feel the blows. This is called dissociation. When you dissociate, you leave yourself behind. Now, dissociation is a very powerful tool. It's a powerful tool because it helps you leave behind the non-functional body so that whatever the body would go through or the abused body, whatever it's going through, you could always come back to it later, pick up the pieces, and help it get through. Well, it turns out that there's many more things than just physical beating that threatens a person. Once the person learns that they have to escape by dissociating, they find other things also challenging, like anger. What do you do when you can't handle anger? What do all of you do when you can't handle anger? What do? You leave yourself. You don't feel it. You disconnect from yourself. You may turn it into something else that they call like passive aggressive. You know, you're angry, and then you become a passive-aggressive angry person. What is a passive-aggressive? Is that you? Is that you? Is that the you that got angry who's now passive-aggressive, which means they're being nice, they're being kind, everybody's loving them? Is that you, or is that an alter you? Because in multiple personality dysfunction, we call that the alter self. The alter self is the self you create to help deal with the crisis of the immediate situation. So how many U's are there? So there's a question, of course, everybody used to think, oh, I must be schizophrenic because they have two parts of their personality. I must be a multiple because I have so many parts of my personality. Well, you see, the difference between the multiple personality and most people is that the multiple cannot identify one personality from another. They can't necessarily see the different personalities, yet they can adopt a personality at any time. Most of us can see our alter personality. So when it comes to multiple personality, there are a number of different kinds that we get. The mental entity, through the process of dissociating, what we do is we create something to avoid the pain to our original personality. One of them is called the false front. This is designed for everyday social activity, and it replaces your original personality. This will not be able to process negative emotions, and you could develop anger, so you have to do something about that. But the false front is that front that you put up every time you feel that you're challenged. Now, that could mean any time you meet people. You know, you go to a party. Who's going to go to the party? You want people to see you? No, you put your false front there. Well, do we all have false fronts? Are we all straight? You go on a dating world. You go into Match.com or one of those things. And you do speed dating, I think they call it. What is that? It's false front meets false front. And what happens is you're wondering, where's the real person underneath this? I wonder who the real person is, but you're allowed to be false front to false front to false front to false front. So it's a number of false fronts in a room. And it's like nobody's there. Nobody's in that room. Just this other self, this alter social self. And then there's another personality that we have, which is called the persecutor. This alter personality is designed to accept, hold, process, and express forbidden negative emotions. They commonly make themselves as a clone of the abuser. Like if you were beaten by your father, you develop this alter personality that looks just like your father. You scream just the way he did. You behave just the way he did. So the persecutor in all of us is the part of us that is designed to express the forbidden negative emotion. Why forbidden? Because if you expressed it when you were young, you would have gotten annihilated. They were bigger than you were. But you continue it now, and you have a personality that has this in it. Now, how many of you have had rageful outbursts? And you look back at that rageful outburst and you say, who was that? I know a woman who claims, her family claims, she's the nicest person in the world. They say she is just an angel. When her boyfriend told a story about how she picked up something and hit him with it and was throwing his stuff around and was screaming at him, and they were all shocked. How could that be? That's not Mary. It's not what she does. She's not like that. Well, Mary has that. Mary has a persecutor personality. She has this to appear. Do you have a persecutor personality? Do you ever lose it? Right? Do you have that? Have you ever really lost it? Has it been a part of you? Okay, another personality is what we call the helper. When a persecutor causes so much trouble that you get in danger, the balance is maintained by some helper alter personality who comes along and says, wait a minute, cool down. And you're talking to yourself. And this is like your id ego and super ego. It's like this is this part of you in the middle that is saying, oh, cool it down. Wait. Don't necessarily, you don't have to react like this right now. So we have that. Another alter personality that we very often have is the handicapped one. Now, this one is known to be able to not function certain ways. Like you can't exert yourself. You could have a heart condition. You could have any number of physical manifestations that kind of indicate the forbidden emotions that you have. If it's trouble with your eyes, it's things you don't want to see. If there's trouble with your ears, it's things you don't want to hear. And there's also a thing called the identifier. And the identifier is a personality that takes its design by identifying with other people. So what you do is you act as if you're somebody else and you behave just like them. So if you watch Jennifer Lopez, on Idol, American Idol. Mm-hmm. If you watch Jennifer Lopez, who seems to be an adorable person, and she seems to be so nice, and you take on her personality rather than yours, you see what it's like to be sweet and loving and accepting and intelligent and all of that stuff, but you adapt this because you're avoiding the original self. Now, let's go back to the original self. So therefore, do we all have these alter personalities? Now, when I was a specialist in MPD or multiple personality disorder, we like to mock the people who thought that they were split personalities. We like to say, no, we're the specialists. We know about this dissociative disorder and you guys don't have anything to it. But I'm beginning to think more about it. I'm beginning to think that many more people have a secret self than we know. And that secret self is not under the control of your primary self. Could you give you an example of it? The sleeping self. So a number of years ago, I was working with somebody, and working with means as a therapist, you're doing, they're coming in to see you, okay? So I'm working with somebody who comes in to see me, and they wanted hypnosis, so I was specialized in hypnosis, so I did some hypnosis. And the person started talking to me about having nightmares, so I said, well, let me talk to the one who dreams. Well, little did I expect that the dreaming personality actually came up to talk to me. And I said, who are you? And he said, well, I'm the one who dreams. I'm the one who has all the pictures and all the images, but his eyes were closed. And I said, but your eyes are closed. He said, well, I don't see anything because I live in darkness. I just hear everything. And what I do in the middle of the night is I make up something from what I hear. I said, well, that's fascinating. Is that what dreams are all about? Is that why dreams have all these funny connected images? You know, I dreamt that I was at my grandmother's house, but she was really 14 years old. You know, in these little combination of things, it says, yes, what we do is we retrieve everything from your brain. We could play any movie of any time, and we'll pull on different sections of your brain for memories that we will connect to some stimulus that's happening now. So let's say you're having a fight with your husband. We'll bring that in, and then we'll replay some tapes with your father, with your mother, with your uncles, your aunts. We'll throw in some seaside resorts. We'll throw in a lover that you had an affair with. And we'll throw that all in, and that will become a dream. And you'll have this dream, but it's not you having the dream. It's me creating this image of a dream. Well, I said to the alter personality, who was the dream, I said, so are you them? They said, no. No, I'm me. I am a separate self. I'm the dreamer. Well, I went to the... I went and I presented this to a couple of professional people. I'm saying, can you believe that? that the dreaming self is not the real self, but it's really an alter self, an alter personality, like multiple personality dysfunction. And they said that can't possibly be true because they specialize in dream analysis. Now, what is dream analysis? It's taking a dream and analyzing it so that we can figure out what your real personality needs. What this would do is throw out the entire thing out the window. It would say, no, it's not you and showing your needs. It's showing the needs of this dark personality of yours called the alter personality. That's the needs it's showing. So it didn't go, we had to test it from there. And we did induce 12 people to bring their alter personality dreaming self present. And we learned this was validated. So I presented it. There was an article written on one of the Brain Mind bulletins about it, and I was refuted. Not only was I refuted, but I was condemned. They came after me and they said, no, the Jungian Society said, we depend on dream analysis. You got to be kidding. You can't say it's disconnected from you. And then I saw me spending the rest of my life defending this observation, and I didn't care all that much. I just thought it was a good observation that I could use, and I was trying to share it with the people around me, but I wasn't going to spend the rest of my life defending it. You know, I wasn't going to do that. I said, oh, it's right. Think whatever you want to think. But in my mind and in my work, I've always considered that that's there. Now, let's talk about other selves that we may have. When you are caught in one of your obsessions, is that you? Let's say the drug addict. Let's say the alcoholic. Is the alcoholic, is the person who is getting drunk, is the drunk person you drunk? Or is it not you? Well, this is scary because everybody would say, but it can't be a not you because we identify it as a not you. Then you won't take any responsibility for it. Then you won't control it because we have to get you to believe that you're in charge of this so that you could control it and cure it. And that's what we want to believe that we could do. But what if it is an altered self? What if it is another you that is saying, no, this is my existence in a bottle. This is the way I live. Very, very interesting. If that's the case, then you may not be responsible at all. What about the fat you or the overly skinny you? Are they responsible? I was reading an article lately about eating disorders among the elderly. And it talked about how the eating disorders, especially bulimia, and other eating disorders are appearing in the elderly because they are obsessed with staying thin as they get older. And it's like their whole life is about this. And it's like an obsession. What happens to you when you get older and you suddenly have only one personality, which is the personality that talks about this? Well, one manifestation of it was the other day I got together with some friends and I noticed that we were all talking about physical things. It was like a funny scene. Everybody was talking about some part of their body. Oh, you know, I went to see a doctor, blah, 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 blah. And I said, wait a minute. Have we finally crossed that bridge where we get together as a group of people and what we talk about is our physical selves in some form or other? We're talking about our body, the inside of our body, and the way our body works. Teenagers hate this when they hear older people do it. I said, let's not do it. And we had a fun time, the small group of us, trying to inhibit ourselves from making reference to our health or our body, but it kept sliding back there. It kept sliding right back into that. So we started making jokes about it. You know, we kept saying, well, you know, well, the sun is shining. Oh, and that'll kill my arthritis. You see, and you kept, because we couldn't find ourselves not doing it. But there is a part of us that develops late in life that is an alter self that is obsessed with staying alive, obsessed with it, and it just functions on its own, and you can't control it. So somebody says to you, why don't you just be nice? Why don't you just hang out? Why don't you do this? You can't do it because the alter self is there. Now, of course, I'm going to be asking you about your alter selves. And I know the difficulty of what I'm saying. I understand the difficulty of me saying to you, there is another part of you that may not be you. It may be an alter you that is doing all the things that it does. Like let's talk about an adolescent as he's growing up, a young male adolescent. And all he's got in his mind is sex. This is some nice young boy who lives down the block. But he's Randy, and all he's obsessed with is sex all the time. And he spends a lot of his time masturbating off in some room somewhere because it makes him feel good. And all that's on his mind is sex. Is that a him? Is that that same kid? Is that that same guy you grew up with? Is that that nice boy down the block? Or is this some secret self that is totally taken over for now? How many times have you been taken over by a secret self? How many times that you could remember that you could look back and say to yourself, who was that? Who was that person back then? Who was doing those things? This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. We'll be taking your calls after our break today, which is at 212-209-2900, because I want to hear from you about your alter self. And the way I'm going to answer your questions is to present what I think is called the null hypothesis. This has nothing to do with Gary. In science, the null hypothesis is, let's prove that it's not true. See, instead of proving that it's true, let's prove that it's not true. And I'm going to say to you that I believe everybody has an alter personality who does dysfunctional things. And that the problem is not controlling ourselves to make the alter personality functional, but instead befriending the alter personality. Getting on board with the alter personality. Becoming the kind of negotiating with the alter personality so that at some point the alter personality will make a deal with you and say, okay, I won't smoke for a day. But you got to make sure that I could go back a day later. And you make deals with yourself. But it's not with yourself. It's with this other personality. And I believe in almost every case of every compulsion, every addiction, that if we were to look at this as alter personality and us making peace with alter personality, we'd have a different way of looking at it. Now, just finally, one other last thing. We've had a recent, of course, we've had an onslaught of drugs that are called serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which are Paxil and Prozac and all those things. That in recent research, the personality traits that they've done and the tracking, that antidepressant medications change the personality. The person who is on antidepressants, let's say Prozac, let's say you're depressed, then you take Prozac, and now you're not depressed, but you notice you're also not sexual. Part of the research is that it changes the personality, not that it just lifts the depression. So you go from being one person to being another. And in fact, what we've learned is that people who take antidepressants, and I'm not against them, very often have a higher incidence of divorce. Because you take the antidepressant and it's a different you. It's not the you married. It's a different person out there. And finally, one of the things I'm going to say is if you look at your mate as having more than one personality, you might find it a lot easier to live with them. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
Give me land, lots of land, under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in.
Don't fence me in. Which is, I think, the beginning of the alter personalities. See, that's what happens to us, my friend. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. In case you just tuned in, we're talking about alter selves. I spoke to a young woman recently who said, my father's like Jekyll and Hyde. He can either be the kindest, most loving, fabulous self, or he becomes this worrisome, crazy self. Now, how about you and your mates? I mean, let's consider hormonal changes for a minute. You know yourself enough to know that when you go through certain hormonal shifts, the person you look back on is like not you. And then you find that the person who leaves that, and I'll do this with the menstrual cycle, for example, for those who have these sensitive menstrual cycle reactions, well, for the 6 days before or whatever your timing is, you can feel crazed, like you're some other person talking. And then, as soon as it passes, as soon as your period passes, and you're suddenly back to what feels like a normal self. And you look back over your shoulder and you say, who was that? Who was that person? Or if you're a person who's a man who's driven by a sexuality, for example, and testosterone is really coming up and some guy challenges you and you decide you're going to take him on in battle and then you're going to confront him and you're going to deal with him. And then you look at yourself fighting stupid, silly battles. And you look back and you say, who was that? Or road rage. You know, you're in a car and a person kind of cuts you off and you scream at them. Hey, well, who is that man? Who's screaming? Who am I? Where was I? Now, where was I is a very good question because there is some genuine self that you could sense. And it seems to be absent. At some point, you just lost it. That's the expression we have. We call it losing it. We call it being besides yourself, almost as if this other self is standing right next to you somewhere. So I believe that we have these kind of automatic functional selves that are there, but they're not under our immediate control. And part of what we've been doing with addiction is trying to get people to control themselves more and more. Control yourself, control yourself, control yourself. That's the theme. Control your anger, control your love, control your fear, control over and over as if you're the one who could control it. And I say, well, you know, in some cases that may be true, but in most cases that I know, that other thing doesn't want to be controlled. It doesn't want to get fenced in. It's there for your survival. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
Wow, the first half hour of the show has put my brain into overload.
Thank you. That's exactly what I hope to do.
Oh, you did it. You know, there was just this vision I had at one moment. If you're familiar, when you're standing looking in a mirror and there's a mirror immediately behind and you see yourself over and over into the distance.
Yep.
And I just had that vision.
That's a great image. That's a great image. And you could see yourself over and over in all your different incantations.
Yeah, except what happens is you try to look at where it starts and you can't see it because it becomes blurry and it's so far in the distance you just never actually see that one cell.
That's not the reason you can't see it. The reason you can't see it is because you're in the way. You see, the problem is you're in the way.
That's perfect.
And that's a perfect metaphor, right?
Oh, gosh, that really says it right. You're right. I'm in the way, and I can't move out of my own way.
Right, I can't get out of my way to see myself.
Oh, gosh, that's great. Well, if this topic is alter self, I'm Walter, so I'm the Walter self.
You're the Walter alter.
Yeah, I'm the Walter alter, so.
Thank you.
Where do we go? How do we play that null game now? Where do I fit into this?
Well, I think what we have to do is make peace with it. You know, not make peace with it, meaning find it, identify it, and not be self-critical about it. Don't beat yourself up over it. Give me an example of what are one of the things that your alter personality does that you just don't like yourself for doing.
Well, like you, I'm an 8, and so anger drives me. And when that anger comes out, there's times that I just don't even see it. It happens, and I don't see it, I don't feel it, I don't hear it until after the fact.
You know where a key of this one is? It's a very good clue because of the eightness that you talked about, betrayal.
Absolutely.
When you sense betrayal, it sends a button It says, bring up the Tomahawk missiles. You know what I mean? It shuts down all of the things. That's it. We're going in for nuclear war.
Listen, you don't have to lie to me about world peace. All you have to do is lie to me about your age, and you've already... I'm fearful that there's something going to be done to me.
So that's it. So betrayal becomes one of the keys. And I have, since I have one of those as my buttons, you know, I have friends who know me and they laugh at me. They say, oh, there's that betrayal thing. I go, oh, yeah, there it is. That's what you get lucky to do.
If you recall 2 years ago, you and I spoke when my wife went through a midlife crisis and did the ultimate betrayal to me and just really destroyed my life and my family at the time. And I'm still recovering. I still have post-traumatic stress from it, which is kind of interesting because you talk about that alternate self, and the self I have now is this kind of it's a survival self. I still, 2 years later, have this survival self, and a part of me, there's part of me that I know is missing that I just can't identify. I can't see it. I can't feel it, but I know it's there. I know what it was. I know who it was, but I just can't sense it anymore. I can't be with that self anymore.
Yeah. Well, one of the ways, I believe, is as you identify the selves that aren't there, you know, eventually you find this kid sitting in the middle of the room alone.
Well, and I do, like you, look at myself as a young child in pictures, and I do know that regardless of where I am and how happy I am, I'm always alone.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling in, Walter.
Okay, thanks,
everyone. 212-209-2900. Warriors. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Turn down your radio, please.
Hello?
Hello. Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Hi, Armand. My name is Rob. I'm calling from Rockland. How are you?
Good, Rob.
I was just listening to what you were saying, and it reminded me of the first time I really knew that I could have an alter ego. I was about in the fourth grade, and I had a very violent father. And I remember it was a Sunday morning, and I was getting a beating. And I remember the belt coming down on my body over and over and over again. And I remember, like I said, it was a Sunday morning. So the newspaper was there, and the comic section was on the paper. And I remember I started looking at the newspaper, and I started reading the comic as I was getting beaten. And I remember that I stopped feeling the lashes, and it was, I almost wanted to just jump up and laugh at my father and tell him, "You're not hurting me anymore." But I didn't, and
because he might have killed you. He might have said, "Oh yeah, let me show you this."
Yeah. But I remember.
But you remember this dissociation, and you remember leaving your body, and you remember looking at the comics.
I remember reading it. It was Dandy. I was reading the Dandy comic.
Right. Amazing, amazing. Where do you do that nowadays when you're with people? Where do you leave?
If something really horrible is happening, or if I'm being confronted by a person that I really don't want to deal with, I can turn the volume down, and I can turn everything off so that I'm not really there. I try not to do that because it can really be bad for me. Like if you're in a business situation and I've decided, you know, that I'm going to confront a certain issue. But it's something that I'm aware of, and I know that, you know, I have to try to, you know, stay in the now.
So let's say that we took a different approach to it. Let's say the guy who does that, let's give him a name. Make up a name for him.
Greg.
Dick, right?
Sorry?
What did you say, Dick?
Greg.
Greg, you said Greg. Let's say his name is Greg, and you're Rob.
Yeah.
And you see Greg is there, and you see Greg is functioning. And instead, if you look at it and say, oh, Greg, I see you're here. I see you're here. You see, what happens is by the time you see Greg, you are Greg. And what we're looking to do is to have Greg communicate with Rob. To have Greg say, yeah, well, I'm going to take care of this. This is the way I'm going to handle this situation. And Rob's not going to oppose him. Rob's going to say, good for you. This is what you need to do. And the two of them carry on a dialogue with each other. It begins to lessen its power. Because, you know, Greg is lonely. He's a very lonely guy. Because he's isolated, he's displaced. All he can do is read comic books.
Yeah.
Thank you for calling in, Rob.
Yeah, thank you.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with you. We're talking about altered personalities. Hi there. Turn down your radio, please.
Yeah, I cut it off already.
Good. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Armand. Thank you in advance for taking my call. I'm calling because I've been reading about neurolinguistic programming, right? And I discovered certain things that you've been talking just now in this program in my own personality. For example, I find out that the problem that I have with a lot of infections and sore throat since I'm a child, it comes from something. I just find out the source. And I have all the problems, like I believe it's called the linear time in my brain, et cetera, et cetera. So I would like to have, like, some type of help, if you can address me to, because I'm very interested in going over that and fixing those problems, which is kind of the same thing that you've been talking about the personality just now.
Well, okay, when that part of you appears, describe that part to me.
Okay, well, for example, the part of the infectious situation with my body is when I discover there is when I'm under stress or when I'm rejected or when I'm in a situation, let's say job stress, et cetera, et cetera. Like, situation that I feel like difficult to handle. So I discovered that I go unconsciously, of course, into a sick mood. I'm going sick. I'm going to have sore throat right now, and I'm going to go sick. So it's a way to escape a situation of stress.
So if we were to give that person, the one who gets sick, if we were to give them a name, because you've seen this person before, right? You've been here before with this person.
What do you mean that I have seen it?
I mean, you've been here before. You felt this before. You feel this many times. You could identify that mood, right?
Yes, yes.
So if we if it's possible to identify, what if we give it a name?
Let's call it Johnny.
Let's call it Johnny. Very interesting that you give it a child's name. Let's call it Johnny, and here comes Johnny, who feels like he can't handle what's going on, and so Johnny appears, and he's sick. Now, what you generally will do is you'll criticize Johnny for what he does. You'll say, Johnny, what are you doing? You got to get out of that, and you got to stand up for yourself. Johnny, in turn, digs in and says, I'm going to get sicker until you leave me alone. So I'm saying, the adaptation is for you to welcome Johnny, for you to say to Johnny, oh, I see you're in this place. I see you do what you need to do, Johnny. I'm going to stand by till you're ready to turn over to me again.
Okay.
And this is where I believe we may find a key to a different way of approaching ourselves.
Okay, I see.
So what we're looking to do is to turn Johnny into your brother, to become your associate itself, so that Johnny will eventually talk to you directly. And the thing we have to be careful with is criticism. We don't want you to criticize him, and we don't want him to criticize you.
Is there any way that I can have somebody, like, professionally to go over that, and because as far as I understand, it's my unconscious mind that is going to be talking, right?
Yes.
So is there any, because I'm kind of afraid of going to portray it just myself, you know?
Sure. Sure. No, I don't know anybody, you know, I mean, this is kind of radical thought. So I don't know anybody other than me who's even thinking it at the moment. You know, it's just I'm kind of saying this is a new way to look at it. And, of course, you could always present it to your therapist and tell your therapist, here's a way of looking at this. What do you think?
Okay. All righty. So thank you very much.
Send me an email if you want. I'll try to tell you if anything comes to my mind, okay?
All righty.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Mr. DeMille. This is Mark out of Plainfield. This is the first time that you've had a topic in the past year that I could get into. I'm ex-Air Force, ex-Navy, and I thought having more than one personality was normal until you said that it wasn't, because on the ship, there's so many dangerous situations that we get into, you have to freak out and get into another personality in order to deal with it.
Oh, you're so right, Mark. You know, I'm reading a book by a guy named Edward Tick called War and the Soul. And he talks about how during wartime and soldiers and sailors who have been over in the middle of war, how they have lost what he calls their soul. That they develop personalities that are soulless. And what he does in this book called War and the Soul, Edward Tick talks about trying to bring the person back in touch with their soul. Well, let's say we don't use the word as big as soul. Let's say we use spirit.
Okay.
When you're in wartime,
yeah,
and you're in the middle of it all, your spirit goes somewhere. It leaves. And what's left behind is a very functional person. Now, you've seen that functional person, right?
Yeah.
You've been that guy, right? You've been the guy who just gets the job done. What do you think of that guy?
Well, sir, I can't explain it, but I'm saying the job gets done. But then, okay, I was in peacetime, but we were during the Reagan administration, we were flying 24 hours a day. But when I came back home, the things that I did overseas, I couldn't do it in the United States, and that's what threw me off. And that's when I had to readjust, but there was so much to readjust to, because I'm used to being in battle time situations. Then all of a sudden, I'm dealing with civilians that don't react the same way as my commanders do. And then it was weird. I mean, I had to react at the same time and not be obvious about what I was doing.
Well, you know, I mean, Mark, it's a really beautiful description of what happens to people. Because here you are lost, and you don't know what self to be.
Wow.
You say, who am I going to be? How do I get through this? You know, and it makes all the sense in the world. So the guy in you, the one who gets confused, who just functions, if we were to give him a name, what would we call him?
Oh, I don't know.
Let's make up a name.
Like what?
I don't like anything. Call him Guido. I don't care. Give him any name at all.
Give him Guido, then.
Okay, so Guido it is. So when you see Guido appear, and you see that you are being Guido, you could say, hey, Mark, I'm doing this because I know it's best for you. Because that's what Guido believes. Mm-hmm. Guido believes this is the best thing he could do for you. And if Guido will address Mark, and I'm talking to the Guidos and everybody, then Mark may be able to respond and say, not criticize him for what he's doing, but just say to him, okay, thank you, but let's talk about it in some future time.
Well, but Ms. Armand, I'm saying, but is there another self that's taken over at any particular time without me knowing it?
See, I think so.
Wow.
I think so, not just with you, but with everybody. I think so.
Well, Mr. Okay, I'm just saying, sometimes I recognize it and sometimes I don't.
Absolutely.
And sometimes I'm able to step back and look and say, wait, I can't do this. This is against the law. And a lot of times, sometimes I just go, and I've gotten to a point now dealing with my people at the VA. I tell them I'm doing this, I'm doing that, and then my doctor might say, well, do this, do that, and then the other. Or in the fellowship, they say, if you don't know what to do, don't do anything at all.
All makes good sense, you know?
Okay.
But when you're confronted with Guido, when you have this right in front of your hands, when you have this thing and you're in the middle of it, I am saying to acknowledge it, but not criticize it.
Acknowledge it? What happens if I criticize it?
Because then it gets mad at you and it becomes invisible.
Oh.
Then it learns to hide from you. Then it gets like the other guy said who was trying to look at himself in the mirror. Sometimes he can't look in the mirror behind you because you're in the way. Listen, there's a book, War and the Soul. I think you might enjoy it, by Edward Tick.
By Edward Tick?
Yes, T-I-C-K.
Hey, thanks a lot, all right?
Sure.
Okay.
This is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. So this is just a speculation. I'm not saying this is true. I'm not saying this is my theory. I'm saying it's just a consideration. It's a way to look at it. What if we looked at addiction as an alter personality? What if we looked at the guy who's smoking behind the building? When you see three or four people smoking cigarettes behind the building, and you say, I wonder if they are having a gathering of alter selves. Because smoking is almost always inevitably the resort of people who can't get angry. You know what I mean? Smoking moderates anger. So then you have these people who are all kind of frustrated people who are gathering together. And there they are. We shouldn't scoff them. We shouldn't laugh at them. We shouldn't criticize them. There they are, these four people. At least they have each other, you know? But then do they have themselves? Can they step out of it? So who knows? This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We are going to be leaving you. We will be back with you tomorrow. This time, for sure, tomorrow, at 1 p.m., we'll take more, we'll do more interesting stuff. Have an interesting interview for you tomorrow. Nice to be with you. If you want to send me an email, it's armand@thepositivemind.com. Do look at the website. You'll find a lot of archives there as well. Be back with you next week, my friends. The